Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, this is Jim Asker, and I am the Country Christian Gospel Chart Manager at Billboard, and I am here with the one and only Mike Kerb at Kerb Studios in Nashville. Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
It's so nice to talk to you, and when I was running down through your bio, I had never seen so many accomplishments ever before for any one person. And so when I highlighted a few things to talk about, that you had done, you just stopped me in the middle if you want to talk about some that are more important to you. Like, I had no idea. I knew you were involved with racing, but I didn't know, too, that you're in the Stock Car Racing Hall of Fame, for instance, and a lot of other things that I don't know. So you
I probably don't deserve to be there, so it's not a shock that you wouldn't know it.
How do you like driving through the streets of Nashville?
Well, it's getting pretty exciting. You probably need to have a little bit of NASCAR experience to get through some of these streets now. It's really crowded, but look, the city's on fire.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I want to talk about, too. Your official title, founder of Kerb Records and chairman of Kerb and Word Records, correct?
Yes.
And after this interview, you're going to be the chairman of my career.
I would be proud to be in that position.
And have you really written over 300 songs?
I have. I wouldn't say they're all very. I wouldn't say I've written over 300 good songs, but
one or two that.
I've won in BMI awards in pop and in country. I had a theme to Kelly's Heroes. Burning Bridges that was recorded by the Mike Kerb Congregation, which was my music group. Mm-hmm. And it won a Pop BMI Award. And I wrote Hank Williams Jr.'s first number one record, All for the Love of Sunshine. I co-wrote it. And we won a BMI Country Music Award for that. And
was that his first number one?
First number one.
I saw a plaque coming in that you had on the wall for that.
It was his first number one record. And I also co-produced it. Although I will say one thing, all the rest of the good ones he wrote. So it's kind of an obscure statistic to have written his first number one, because Hank went on, to find his own inner self as a songwriter, and wrote some of the great country records of all time.
And now he's back on Kerb, right?
Well, he's not officially on Kerb. We have his catalog. He recorded for us for 40 years. Mm-hmm. I'd like him to be on Kerb forever. But we have his catalog, and every once in a while we do a greatest hits album, or we'll do a specialty album with Hank.
Okay, I want to mention also that you were the there's so much to talk about. You were the Lieutenant Governor of California in what year?
I was elected in 1978, mm-hmm. and then I became acting governor in 1980, and the president. A former governor, Ronald Reagan, became president. I was the national co-chairman of the Reagan for President campaign, and I was the acting governor of California. So it was kind of an interesting experience.
Quite amazing. When you were lieutenant governor, was that under Jerry Brown?
Yes. And then Jerry Brown ran for president against Jimmy Carter 1980, but he lost the nomination to, and Jimmy Carter was renominated, and then Ronald Reagan defeated Carter for the presidency.
And now Jerry Brown is back at governor.
He's back at governor and in California, and I'm living in Nashville.
And do you get back there often?
Yes. I have a 95-year-old mother in California, and my sister, who's president of our international company, still works out of our Burbank office, which is right across the street from Warner Brothers in California.
Okay, now, one thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, Jerry Brown was involved with Linda Ronstadt. You know that, of course, for a long time. And then you were involved with the Stone Ponies, different drum, of course, the big hit with Linda Ronstadt. Did you put those two together?
Well, I was the first. Our company was the first company to sign the Stone Ponies. Bob Kimmel, Ken Edwards, and Linda Ronstadt.
Mm-hmm.
And we signed them, I want to say, mid-60s. And we put out singles with them. We didn't get a big hit. We got local airplay on it. And my distributor was Capitol. And one of my mentors was a fellow by the name of Nick Vinay at Capitol. And he asked me if he could move the group over to Capitol. And, you know, because in those days, my record company was very small. I mean, I thought I could make it on my own, but I ended up writing a commercial for Honda called You Meet the Nicest People on a Honda, and I got maybe $3,000 for that. But I ended up living in the janitor section of the building where I had my offices. So I didn't really have the funds to take the Stone Ponies and Linda Ronstadt to the next level. And Capitol was distributing my records. And Nick Vinay called me one day and he said, you know, there's a song that Mike Nesmith of the Monkees wrote called Different Drum. Would you mind if I took a shot at it with the Stone Ponies? And I said, well, if they're willing to do it, that'd be fine. Well, I got to be at the session, but really it was Nick Vinay who really found the song and did it. And so we issued it on Capitol. They gave me an override and it became a big hit. But I wish I could have kept them. Obviously, I wish I could have. Well, I wish I could keep every artist that's ever been on our label forever.
But, you seem to keep a lot of them, though.
Well, a lot of them stay a long time. I mean, Hank Jr. stayed, I think, almost 40 years. But we had two or three good years with the Stone Ponies. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, I was just a teenager when I started the company, so I was pretty proud to have the Stone Ponies. And I did produce several sides with them.
Now, you have been in Nashville for how long? When did
Just about 25 years.
And as chairman of Curb Records and Word Records, a lot of people probably don't know. What exactly does a chairman do? Can you tell us?
I'll tell you, you know, it's funny. I'm right after I finish this, I'm speaking over at Vanderbilt to the Curb Scholars there. And as you know, we do a lot of work with education and with charitable groups, but we have about 10 colleges that we support, like the Curb College here at Belmont and the Cal State Curb College with 5,000 students. And in Vanderbilt, we support future leaders, which we call the Curb Scholars. And I'm speaking to them and meeting with them today for lunch. But what's really interesting is that the students always ask me that same question. They say, what do you do if you own a record company or if you're chairman of the company? And the bottom line is anything someone else is supposed to do that they don't do becomes my job. You know, I either have to do it or find someone to do it. You'd be stunned. Almost every day someone is sick or someone's on vacation or, believe it or not, every once in a while an artist is unhappy, and you, at that point, that becomes your day. That becomes your challenge. So we were fortunate now to have a CEO with Jim Ed Norman who handles, you know, the day-to-day issues and really runs the day-to-day company. at Curb, and then we have a fabulous person also, Rod Riley, who runs Word, and so both of them are so incredibly capable, and we've got so many people who've been. I think we have over 20 of our employees have been with us over 20 years, so we have a really nice, dependable group of people. But I end up having a very full day. Well, a good example is today. Here I am talking to Billboard, which is, you know, was started in 1895, and it keeps the history of not just our company. Our company's 52 years old. I think we've had like over 300 number one records on various Billboard charts.
You are the biggest independent record label in the world, aren't you?
Well, if you go from the beginning, we're certainly the oldest one that's still owned by its original owner because we're in our 52nd year. But having said that, I started this as a teenager when I was a student at Cal State.
Originally as Sidewalk Records?
Well, we tried to get Curb, the name Curb, but there was another label called Cub, C-U-B, so we couldn't get it, which was owned by MGM. And I don't know if you remember the label, but it had artists like Jimmy Jones, who did the original Handyman record and Good Time, and the Impalas, who did Sorry I Ran All the Way Home, that were on a label called Cub, which was owned by MGM. They used the Lion for their main label and Cub for their... And Cub was spelled C-U-B, C, and Curb was C-U-R-B.
Right.
So I couldn't get the title cleared, so I tried to look for something close to Curb, and Sidewalk was about as close as we could come. So we used the name Sidewalk for a few years, and then ironically, we merged with MGM in the late 1960s. I remember I was 24 years old, and I became president of MGM Curb. It was right about the time that Hank Williams Jr. did All for the Love of Sunshine, which I had co-written and co-produced. It was right, and the first act we signed was Eric Burdon and War, Spill the Wine, which went number one on one of the trades. I don't think it ever hit one on Billboard, but it hit number one on Cashbox at the time. And of course, you know the record industry, if it's... It's kind of like Alan Jackson said, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. If it's number one somewhere, right. we throw a number one party. But there, for years, people have said, if it's not number one on Billboard, it's not number one. And when you look at Joel Whitburn and his history and the history you do and Silvio and all that, it really needs to be number one in Billboard. If you want to tell your grandkids that you had a number one record and you want to open up the Joel Whitburn book or you want to check with Billboard, with you or Silvio, it better be number one in Billboard or it won't show.
Oh, excellent. Curb's country roster. Just want to mention some of the artist names in case listeners don't know. Wynonna Judd, Tim McGraw. These are people who have been here through the years. Leanne Rimes, Lyle Lovett, Jody Messina, Clay Walker, Steve Holy, Mo Pitney, who's, of course, on the scene now, Rodney Atkins, Ashley Gearing, who I love, by the way, Dylan Scott, American Young, Lee Bryce, who's doing really well right now. And on the Word roster, you also have some great Christian artists on Curb, too, but you just bought 80%, the remaining 80% of Word. Correct. So some of the artists on that label, Francesca Battistelli, Big Daddy Weave, Stars Go Dim, who were just number one last week on Billboard, by the way. Sidewalk Prophets, Skillet, Switchfoot, Plum, Natalie Grant is on your label. Plum is on Curb as well. So I wanted to ask you, when you bought the 80% of Word, you had 20% before, right? It was always Word Curb, correct?
Yes.
And the imprint. And you bought the 80%. The way the story was framed locally, and we talked about this, it seemed like the building was very important in that sale to you. I know you're very much involved with protecting Music Row as condos kind of just taking over our city right now, yeah. and you've saved about, what, 12 buildings on Music Row so far?
Yeah, probably.
Including Studio A and Studio B?
Well, you know, it really bothers me to see music, it really bothered me to see Music Row falling away, you know, and fortunately, the companies that moved off, I mean, for example, Sony moved off, but Sony doesn't really do business as a label as Sony Records in America. You know, it's Columbia, it's RCA, it's Arista, and even Universal really does their business.
Mercury, MCA,
yeah, yeah, it's Mercury,
Capital.
It's MCA, now it's Capital, EMI.
EMI.
And
mm-hmm.
So even though they moved off, we were able, when we bought the Columbia building. And there's a nice little sign there that says the historic home of Columbia Records. And we also, in that same building, on the right side of the building, was the historic home of Decca Records, you know, which is now part of the Universal Group. So even though we don't have UMG on Music Row, a lot of people don't know what, you know, a lot of the... people who visit from all over the world
have no idea what
they
UMG
don't know.
Is.
In fact, I didn't even know where UMG was until I was downtown. We were involved in a homeless project, and we had a hike for the homeless. And we were walking, I think it was on Church Street, and I saw a sign that had a law firm, and then it had a bank, and it had a accounting firm, and then down
in
the bottom
SunTrust building.
Yeah, and then down, yeah, that's the building, and right. down at the bottom of the little sign on Church Street, it said UMG,
mm-hmm.
and my wife said, "What does that stand for?" I said, "You know, I don't know. It could be. I wonder if it's the Universal Music Group." And sure enough, it was, and they're in the SunTrust building. So I'm glad that they're in Nashville because Nashville is Music City, but Music Row.
And Sony is now moving off Music Row. They're moving to new offices in a new building on Demumbrian right near the interstate.
Sony
Music Nashville.
You mean the record company?
The record company, yes.
Right, but the Columbia Records building we bought.
Right.
And it says on that building, the historic home of Columbia Records. So tourists that go by can still see the historic home of Columbia Records. We have completely refurbished Columbia Studio A, so they can go in and see where Billy Sherrill cut all those great records like Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette. And
I think that's fantastic, by the way, that you give tours.
All those records, I mean... He Stopped Loving Her Today by George Jones and Almost Persuaded by David Houston and, you know, the great Charlie Rich records and the great records by so many different artists. As I mentioned, I think Tammy Wynette, Stand By Your Man. Just wonderful, wonderful records that were cut at Studio A through the years. Bob Dylan cut there. Paul McCartney cut there. But then... in the next building over, which was the historic home of Decca, which it says on the front, and Decca has morphed into MCA and
yes.
and morphed into what is now UMG. And the historic home of Decca, where Owen Bradley's first office was, and the Quonset Hut, which we refurbished, which is right behind right behind that building. And that's where Patsy Cline recorded all of her hits. That's where Brenda Lee recorded all of her hits. That's where Johnny Horton did the Battle of New Orleans. That's where the greatest record of all time, El Paso by Marty Robbins, was cut. And even while it was being built, that little building in front, right where it says Historic Home of Decca, is where Sonny James did Young Love and where Ferlin Husky did Gone and where Marty Robbins did Sing in the Blues, you know. So while the Quonset Hut was being built, we also refurbished RCA Studio B. We even have the cabinet that Elvis Presley kicked in when he was doing It's Now or Never, and he was struggling on that high note, and he kicked in the cabinet.
I never knew that. So he was struggling with a note and then kicked the cabinet?
Well, allegedly. I wasn't there, but we've got that. And last year, 50,000 people went through RCA Studio B, and then we were able to, those we restored ourselves, but we worked with Aubrey Preston to restore Studio A and the historic offices of RCA. So when you look at the history of Music Row, you don't really think so much of the word Sony as you do the word RCA. And so right. The RCA building and the RCA Studio A has been restored, or Columbia.
You know, us insiders refer to it as Sony UMG, but to listeners and fans, it's Columbia, it's MCA.
Yeah, and exactly. I love Sony. I mean, we use their distribution in Japan and Australia and Australasia. You know, they're really good people. And obviously the UMG people are, that's the number one company in the world now. But having said all that, I still think Music Row wouldn't be Music Row without RCA Studio A, RCA Studio B, the Quonset Hut, Columbia Studio A, the Columbia building, the Decca building, the RCA Records building. I think we need all that. And so in your question about Word, yes, that Word building was built by Capitol. And we previously last year bought the original building where Capitol was, which is where Buddy Lee Entertainment is. That was the original Music Row home. But then back when Garth Brooks was being re-signed to Capitol and Capitol was building what is now the Word building, they put the Capitol Tower insignia on the top of the building for Garth, so to make Garth feel at home, because Garth had been moved to Liberty, one of their other labels, and Garth preferred to be on Capitol. So the story goes that they wanted to make Garth happy, as they should, because he's the biggest artist in the history of our industry. And so they put a magnificent Capitol Tower insignia on the top of what is now the Word building. So preserving all that, I mean, I think, and then Ocean Way, too, being the modern
which
studio.
Which is a major studio here.
Yeah. And I'm pretty proud of the Curb studio
it's
here.
It's a beautiful studio we're
this,
in right
this
now.
This is, once you get inside it, I've
never been in here before. It's beautiful.
Well, and you know, we have fabulous people that you met that are in there watching us right now. This building was owned by Roy Orbison.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, and I used to produce Roy Orbison. The great records of his were done by Fred Foster, who thankfully was put into the Hall of Fame yesterday. But he did those records. Fred Foster produced those records at RCA Studio B for Monument. I'm talking about, you know, pretty records like, well, I mean, Only the Lonely, starting with that. That was the first record that he produced there. And look at the career that it spawned. You know?
As a songwriter, producer, founder of a record label, chairman, what do you think, since we're talking about one of the great songs, Roy Orbison, the evolution of music from the 60s or the 50s until today? Where do you think we are right now?
Well, when I was in California starting my company, I couldn't wait to come to Music Row, because there was a time when one out of every two records on what we used to call Top 40 Radio, we call it Contemporary Hits now, but what we used to call Top 40 Radio, one out of every two songs was coming out of either RCA Studio B or the Quonset Hut. And the reason I say that is the pop artists were recording there. And the R&B artist, Bobby Blue Bland, did Turn On Your Love Light at the Quonset Hut. You know, Elvis recorded 250 songs at RCA Studio B, including It's Now or Never and some of his biggest hits. And Roy Orbison, as we just mentioned, Only the Lonely, but Everly Brothers, all their big, big hits, Wake Up Little Susie and Bye Bye Love and All I Have to Do is Dream, all those hits, RCA Studio B, Quonset Hut, Marty Robbins, Johnny Horton, Brenda Lee, Patsy Cline, on and on and on. All and those records by Jim Reeves, even by Skeeter Davis, were crossing over to the top 40 from country. And then so the country records by Jim Reeves and Skeeter Davis and Eddie Arnold, and so they're crossing over. And at the same time, the pop records were being cut there. And even artists later on, like Bob Dylan and McCartney and others, came in to say, what's this magic? But that was happening back in the 60s. Unfortunately, what has happened, and I don't say, I shouldn't use the word unfortunately, I should just say realistically what's happened today is, back then you could only, one person could only own seven radio stations. Now.
And then 12.
Yeah, and then 12.
And then after 1996's Telecom Act, it opened the door for mass ownership.
Right. And so with mass ownership, you don't really have crossover much anymore because with mass ownership, let's say one company owns the country station and the CHR station in a particular market.
Right.
Well, they don't need that artist to cross over because they want the country station to do the promotion when that artist is doing a concert there, and they want the pop station to do it, and they want to sell advertising to the demographic. There's a different demographic for, as you know, for country than there is for CHR.
Yes.
So can an artist cross over? It's very hard. Now, an artist can change, but if they're going to change from country to pop, they better be as big as Taylor Swift. Because Taylor Swift was big enough to say, okay, I'm not going to do country anymore. I'm going to do just pop. Mm-hmm. She's big enough to do that. But if I said to you, name another artist, if we take someone like Lee Bryce, who's doing so well on our label, he's had seven number ones and all
that.
He
had the number one airplay song of the year at Billboard.
Yes. He did it last year, right?
Right, last year.
Last year. With Drinking Class,
right.
But in 2010, he had the number one for the whole year with Love Like Crazy. But in the meantime, he's had number ones with Hard to Love and number A Woman Like You and I Drive Your Truck. And of course, recently, I Don't Dance went number one on the Billboard Airplay chart. It won the ACM Record of the Year at the 50th anniversary, at Cowboy Stadium, which is pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. But Lee Bryce, if Lee Bryce tomorrow said, I'm not country anymore, or if tomorrow Rihanna said, I'm not R&B anymore. The bottom line is we don't, the thing that the consolidation has brought is that there's no reason for radio to want to, even with Christian, to take a Christian record, take a group like For King and Country, they sound like a pop group. Natalie Grant, she can out-sing just about any pop singer there is, and she's on Curb as a Christian artist. But I think that if she were to cross over, the issue that you face is that the iHeart station, for example, that might be playing her record in a certain market, might be fearful that if she does a concert, she's going to do it with the K-Love station. You see what I'm saying? So you've got a situation where even though I can play records for you, and you've heard them by some of our word artists, that sound very competitive to For King and Country is a good example, very competitive. There isn't a reason for the pop station to play it because they would be promoting an artist that ultimately is going to do their promotions most likely with the Christian station.
Right.
We had that happen about 10 years ago. We were fortunate enough to be the co-label for I Can Only Imagine by Mercy Me.
And huge the record crossover.
It was huge. When it came time for Mercy Me to do follow-ups, the concern was, well, where will they do their promotions? And obviously they were going to stay loyal to the contemporary Christian radio stations.
The label seems to always want to protect that.
Well, the label wants to protect their base.
That loyalty of fans in that format.
Sure, but radio also wants to protect that base.
Mm-hmm.
K-Love's proud to have Mercy Me. I think they're proud to have Natalie Grant. But once an artist starts to cross, as I said before, if you really want to totally cross, you better be as big as Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. and she did it, and she did it well, but give me the name of someone else who can do that, and I'll place a bet with you.
Well, you mentioned Taylor Swift and Natalie Grant. Let's talk about female artists for a minute. You have so many great ones: Francesca Battistelli, I mentioned, Natalie Grant, Ashley Gearing on Curb. Recently, you just...
How about Winona?
Winona, of course. You just signed two new artists, Love and Theft and Jared Neiman. And I want to mention one thing. On the country airplay chart, when Kelsey Ballerini had her number one, I think it went to number one July 4th last year, Love Me Like You Mean It. That was the first number one solo female launch record since 2006, Carrie Underwood's Jesus Take the Wheel. Why the dry spell of female artists in the country format?
Well, I don't understand that. The different people have speculated that since the audience is primarily female, that or majority female, that females like to hear males, but I don't believe that. I mean, I like to hear female artists on the radio, and I like to, I mean, I don't, really don't care whether the artist is male or female. I love hearing Carrie Underwood and Miranda Lambert and Kelsey Ballerina. I was thrilled that her record went to number one. But if you look at the airplay lists mm-hmm. of most of the radio stations, you'll find that you have a lot more males being played than females. So this is really more a question, I assume, that's consumer-driven. I assume radio, radio used to be 100% driven by sales and consumers. It's, you know, now that you've got stations owning thousands of stations, they do have the ability to say, we're going to play this artist and this artist fits our format. So this is really more a function, I think, of what radio has become. And I'm not saying radio is right or wrong, but I'm sure radio, with all its call-out research, has come to the conclusion that they should play more male artists. It's not something that we want. I mean, we want record. We would love to see half the records be female and half of them be male. And
when you mention call out research, for anybody who doesn't know, I worked in radio for a long time. You're calling who you hope are your main listeners or P1 listeners, you call them, and you play them a hook of a song over the phone. You can't get people on the phone anymore. It's harder and harder to get people on the phone. And do you think that is an efficient way to find out if your music is working or not?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. I know that if somebody tells me that one of our records is getting good call-out research and they play it, then I think it's great. And if somebody tells us one of our records is not getting good call-out research, then I don't think it's so great. So I think it's kind of like all the award shows. People say, there's so many award shows now, we can't remember who won CMA Vocalist of the Year last year. We can't. And my answer to that is, look, there's something for everybody. There's awards for everyone. These shows do well or they wouldn't be on the air. Call-out research, I think, is changing a lot now because, our big challenge, as you know, is that most of the promotion people who are really good came from terrestrial radio. And terrestrial radio still, for the most part, is a big factor in the charts. Certainly the airplay.
In Nashville.
Well, the airplay
country,
chart. But I mean media base, Nashville and it with the Billboard airplay chart.
And we have Nielsen. There's the two main ones are Nielsen and media base. Ours is Nielsen.
Oh, yes. BDS, which was incredible because when it came in the mid-90s, we were the first company to benefit from it because we had they used to have a deal where R&R, which was, I guess, the predecessor to what is now the media-based chart to some degree. But R&R, which was bought by Billboard, and fortunately, by the way, because R&R had the contemporary Christian charts going for, and it actually took over the CCM charts, that preceded the R&R Christian charts. So the fact that Billboard bought that, it preserved a lot of the history of the Christian music mm-hmm. charts. But having said all that, going terrestrial radio tends to drive the charts. And re-educating your regional promotion people to say, hey, you can't just go to the terrestrial station. You got to go to internet radio. There's even Spotify now, you know, with what John Marks is doing with Spotify. There's going to be a Spotify chart, and there's an iTunes chart, and there's so many, and there's YouTube and all that.
And by the way, we use all that info in our charts. The Billboard Hot 100 is a combination of airplay, streaming, sales.
And I wanted to, I was just coming to that to commend Billboard for being able to, I guess we call that the consumption chart now. Is that the consumption or what is the?
Well, the Hot 100 is a hybrid chart.
Right.
So that's a combination of sales, streaming, and airplay. Yeah. And, you know, the Hot Country Songs chart is a combination of all those things. And sometimes when I mention to a label, well, your song is number one on Hot Country Songs, I have to explain to them what it is. But it's to me, it's more reality than the airplay chart because there's so many kids streaming and downloading digital. So it's a combination of all those things. The country airplay chart in Nashville for Christian too, and for country is the major platform that you guys all use. But for, it seems like for other formats,
I don't use it. Because,
but a lot of money is still spent on driving.
I mean,
airplay.
I look at it and I care about it. But I will tell you what means something to me. And that is having a number one record for history. Mm-hmm. And I think we've had over 300 number ones in various Billboard charts. But you mentioned a lot of labels don't know the Hot Country Songs chart. Well, I can tell you right now that when Joel Whitburn does his book, his next country book, and he goes all the way back to 1944 with his Billboard book, and I can tell you right now it's going to be off the – he's using the Hot Country Songs.
Right.
So – just to give you an example, take Lee Brice. When a woman like you hit number one, Hot Country Songs was the same as the airplay chart. And
right.
So he would show number one on Hot Country Songs. But when Hard to Love went number one, by that time, the new hybrid chart was in. And it while it went number one on the airplay chart, it did not go number one on Hot Country Songs. And so basically... a lot of artists who think that they have a number one, have the number one country song right now, when they're talking to their grandkids years from now and they open up Joel Whitburn's book of country hits,
they won't be in there.
They're going to see that that record went to number four or number five. No, I know exactly what it has meant, and it is very hard to get number one or even to know how to get to number one. But I'm going to tell you what I like about what Billboard's doing. I really think that you finally created a hot country singles chart that can't really be manipulated. Whereas the airplay charts, obviously, well, I don't want to say manipulated in a negative way, but whoever has the best promotion staff can sometimes get the number one record.
You brought up something I was going to mention because we talk about that all the time. The airplay chart is something they can still at least try to manipulate by steering.
They
airplay.
Do manipulate it,
and,
you know, and everybody does it. Everybody. I mean, if we have a record going for number one on there, we just last year we were going for number one, you know, on an airplay song. And we try to put our syndication together. I mean, everything that's legal, the record companies do. And hopefully not more than that. But certainly if you have opportunity to go number one, there's nothing wrong with your promotion staff doing everything they can.
Right.
I'm just saying
that's their job.
That what I love about the Hot Country Singles chart is I really think that's a reflection of what is the real number one.
It's reality, right.
Yeah, and I like that. And you've done the same with the Hot 100. Now, the Hot 100 chart didn't start till 1958. You know, I remember I bought the very first single that went number one on the Hot 100 chart, which was Poor Little Fool by Ricky Nelson. But over the years, for example, You Light Up My Life by Debbie Boone was the number one record for the whole decade of the 70s on Billboard. And that'll never go away. In fact, when Billboard published the top singles of all time, the in the top 10, two of the top 10 were Leanne Rimes and Debbie Boone. Mm. And no one would have ever believed that. In fact, the Debbie Boone record of You Light on My Life, I think, is the biggest selling single in the history of the distribution system we use, which is Warner. So the Billboard, I'm a big fan.
Do you teach a class in this stuff?
No,
this
but
is
I love to talk about it.
Every kid should know.
Well, I don't teach a class in it, but I love talking to you. I love talking to Wade, Justin, when he was alive.
Away.
And my best friend for 30 years was Casey Kasem. And I
a good Lebanese guy.
Yes, and I did the eulogy at his funeral.
You did?
Yes, I did. He was my best friend.
Wow.
And he if you what I miss is once a week he would call me and say, "Mike, I've got one for you. There's an artist that was born 20 miles out of Cleveland and he put out 11 different singles and on 5 different labels."
Eric Carmen.
Yeah. And then it would
Who was it?
I'm actually kind of making it up there.
I thought it was the Raspberries. Yeah, Eric Carmen.
Oh yeah, Eric Carmen. Yeah,
from Cleveland.
It could very that profile could very easily. I don't know whether he was with the Raspberries originally before he struck out on
right.
his own. So I don't know if he fit the exact formula that I mentioned of putting out 5 or 6 singles first, but I do know that he struggled for a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were best friends with Casey Kasem.
Sad
how it ended his life.
Well, we're still working on getting the burial.
As a former disc jockey, I used to listen to him when I was 9, 10 years old, and he was the master of keeping listeners listening when he went to a break. He would always he was the first one to do that, I think, in such a great manner that he would tease what was coming up next, you know, when he went to commercials.
Yeah. Well,
and
he's the greatest one.
Amazing.
He's the greatest one that ever lived. Because he not only did he have the perfect voice for radio,
so distinctive.
It was so distinctive. It wasn't the normal thing that you look for in a booming voice or whatever. It was just so real. He cared so much about the history, so much about the history. He's the greatest one that ever lived, and I got to induct him into 2 or 3. Radio Hall of Fames or participate in the inductions. And I miss him every day. In fact, his daughter called me yesterday, and I'm going to be calling her today.
Wow.
Carrie Kasem.
That's really great.
We're still trying to get the body back. You know, he got remarried. And
right. And she seemed to control a lot of things at the end.
Well, the new wife, I guess some issues developed between Casey's kids from the first marriage, the three. Julie, Mike, and Carrie, and he named his son after me, and
oh really?
I had a. We're still. Let's put it this way. We're still trying to get the body back and get a burial, and you know we don't know all the exact issues, but there's progress being made.
Just get back to female artists once again. You know, we have some great country female artists who are breaking out now. Brandi Clark, Maren Morris, My Church. I don't know if you've heard that one. The last two artists that you signed were Love and Theft and Jared Neimans. Any new?
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique. And your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Female artists in the works for you?
Yes. And Ruthie Collins started as a writer with us, but she's making some amazing records. Ashley Gehring,
I love Ashley
is
Gehring.
One single away. In fact, she's got a song now called Love Can Go to Hell, and she recorded it, and she even got the license to record it. But one of the artists that you just mentioned wrote the song. And who records for another label.
Okay.
And they have pretty much, let me put it this way. The artist isn't doing it, but it appears that the label that she records for is doing everything they can to keep the record from being played by...
All these legalities that the listener doesn't
know about. Ashley Gehring's record is available to be played. But the writer of the song records for another label, and that label, in my opinion, is doing everything they can. You know, it's a lot easier to convince radio not to play something than to play it.
Hmm.
But this record, if somebody would play Ashley Gehring's record of Love Can Go to Hell, it would be a big hit, and it's out. But she didn't write it, and in all fairness, another artist did. And, you know, I'm not criticizing... the artist.
You know what I love about her is that she stopped her career. Yeah. She's done a couple of benefit shows for me when I raised money too. I think she's really a great person too. She stopped her career kind of and went back to college, finished that, and now has come back to...
Well, she stopped her career and went to the Curb College at Belmont.
Yeah,
I was really proud of, you know. And now she has a record called Love Can Go to Hell that's a smash, and radio could play it. But another label that has a record that might be released down the road by the writer of the song is doing everything they can to keep Ashley's record from being played.
Hmm.
You know, and I know I'm not supposed to say things like that.
You can say whatever you want.
But I'm not.
This is a podcast, so
well,
you can say.
I'm one of I don't like to be politically correct, but I don't like stuff like that because I think Ashley Gehring's record deserves to be played. Love Can Go to Hell, Ashley Gehring. I hope somebody starts playing it.
Me too. Let me ask you really, can you just give a quick answer for this? Because a lot of people don't know. How does an artist get signed?
Well, first of all, I like to think that we've always searched for the greatest voices. I mean, when we signed the Judds originally, a lot of people think they were signed to RCA. That's not true. They were signed to Curb, and Curb entered into a co-venture with RCA.
I remember that. But Curb was on the label, right?
It was RCA Curb.
Right.
But we owned the masters, and Brent Mayer produced the records. And RCA did a good job because we were still living in California at the time. RCA did a good job with the marketing and promotion. But it was they were Curb Records, and the Judds albums are all now on Curb. And in fact, we just had an album of their number one songs that I think it just reached platinum. But Winona has just consistently been with us, and she her new album is a little more Americana, although there's a song called Jesus and the Jukebox on Winona's album that just came out that if country played it, it would be a smash. She sings it in
that. It sounds like a great country title.
Oh, and she sings it in that register, voice register, like she did back when she was with the Judds. She's not using her low voice. She's not using her real high voice. She's in that mid-register where Brent Mayer, who produced the Judds records, always found magic. And the record is called Jesus and the Jukebox. And it's a kind of record that if country played it, there's nobody like Winona. There's nobody, and there never will be. And I've always tried to find the really good voices. You know, Leanne Rimes, when we signed Leanne Rimes, and people said, everybody turned down Blue, but we didn't because the fact that everybody thought she sounded like Patsy Cline, and she's 13. Unlike most teenage artists, Leanne Rimes didn't sound like a teenager. And it was amazing. And we had a fabulous time with Leanne for almost 18 years, And even now...
Are you still friends?
Oh, yes. I mean, well, when I say friends, I see her from time to time. I saw her recently.
So a good relationship still.
Oh, very good. she had that one incident with her dad, you know, where they... but they patched that up, you know. And she even re-signed with us after that incident. And we had a bunch of hits after that. Coyote Ugly, I mean, the...
Right.
Can't Fight the Moonlight. I mean, but it was a pop hit.
Another great, I mean, you mentioned Winona and Leanne Rimes. Yeah. Winona Judd and Leanne Rimes, two of the great voices in country
music.
We could
go all the way back to Linda Ronstadt when she signed with us in the mid-60s. Even she was still with the Stone Ponies.
So is that what you're looking for, that magical voice?
Sure. And to me, Ashley Gehring has it. Ashley Gehring could be the next Faith Hill.
Hmm.
She's not as distinctive, let's say, as Winona or Leanne, but she has the ability, like Faith Hill, to make a great record, and she's got a great voice. She could sing. I mean, if somebody played "Love Can Go to Hell" by Ashley Gehring, it would start to break on its own. That's how we found out about the power of BDS at Billboard. I was telling you that back in those days, R&R had a policy they wouldn't even put a record out to be charted unless it had 10 stations. Mm-hmm. Well, Blue right. only had 5 stations.
But they were playing it a lot.
But they were playing it a lot. And Wade called me. Wade called me because he said, are you guys hyping this record because it's only on 5 stations? And I said, no, we're not hyping it. What are you referring to? And he said, well, the record just showed up at 49 with a bullet on our chart. And we're excited because we've just started BDS. And this is the first time that a record has charted with only 5 stations, and it's proving how valuable BDS is, because BDS also controls or stops the manipulation mm-hmm. to a great degree. You really, look, you can do midnight spins. And
it's kind of the same way as when, you know, we started tabulating record sales
right.
through scans instead of record stores calling in. Yeah. Reports of how many sold.
Yeah, well,
it's the same. It's reality.
It's reality, but the bottom line is Wade was so excited because Wade had so much integrity. He didn't like records being manipulated,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that this was on an independent label, and then of course the record went all the way to the top 10, but more importantly, it proved that it was a hit because the album, I think, sold, what, 6 million albums, you know, the Blue album. So a star was born, you know, and it happened. It only would have happened with BDS because at that time, R&R didn't even have it out to be on the map because it didn't meet the 10-station rule. So,
yeah. And the great thing about radio, the magic of radio, is a believer in a song taking it and making it a hit.
Yes.
And that's, it's just magic that could happen.
Yes.
To me. You know, it's one of the reasons why I got into radio in the first place. I want to ask you, has the world of TV, American Idol, The Voice, have those shows, we've had some great artists, Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, have those shows been good for music in your opinion?
You mean the like
in
American
general.
Idol?
Yeah, Idol, well, The Voice. I mean, they've been good for music.
You have to say it's been good because Carrie Underwood, I don't think there's a finer representative for our format than Carrie Underwood. And she won American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look.
And so did Kelly Clarkson.
And it was great for Kelly. It hasn't been great for everybody. It was hard for me to watch because I don't like discouraging artists. So, I mean, if an artist isn't great and we don't sign the artist, I don't like to critique it.
Right.
So
okay.
I didn't like that guy, I forget his name, owned the show, but what's his name? The guy that was so rude
judge.
To the artist.
Simon,
yeah. I couldn't watch that. Because he was so rude. And one of the artists, Kimberly Locke, who was our artist, African-American artist. And we had a bunch of, you know, it's funny, I think she's probably had 6 or 7 number ones in Billboard, but they've been on the AC chart mostly. Mm-hmm. And we even went number one with a couple of records on that were Christmas records, but on the main AC chart, you know. But we had, and we had a number one airplay pop record with her right at the very start. But putting all that aside, you know, I know some of the artists who've been on the show, and you know, I just think being rude to an artist on television is, and having, I just don't understand why people respond to that. So I'm kind of glad that he's off that and it's going away. But I do think it served a great purpose, you know, in breaking, in artists who could survive that, like Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson, turned out to be a great thing. So I probably shouldn't be critical of it. I just couldn't watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to get your take on that.
I just don't believe in saying, look, artists get unhappy easy enough. You don't need to provoke it. And then when you really think about it, there are a lot of people, I mean, in like my case, and there's others like me who've had a lot of hits, and we've never, ever said to an artist rude comments like that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy, I don't know if he's ever produced a hit in his life, maybe he did, and he's out there just being rude to artists and he's getting good ratings. I don't get that, and I don't like that.
Well, how do you listen to new music? How do you find new stuff?
You know, it's submitted. We have an open policy at our company. As long as it's been copywritten properly, if somebody submits a record, we're going to listen to it. We're going to listen to that record. And, I mean, we have people drop records, people in the neighborhood, you know, and we're open, whether it's an African-American record, whether it's a R&B record, I mean, or whether it's a contemporary Christian record, whether it's rock, pop. Nashville is wide open for everything.
There's a great African-American singer, Mickey Guyton, who's on the scene right now trying to break through. I don't know if you've heard her or not. She's on UMG.
I have.
Tremendous.
And I think she's great. And
I just hope she breaks through.
I hope she does, too. What that would mean, if we could get Hispanic artists to break through at country and African-American artists. I had Trini Triggs for several years, and we had several Billboard chart records with Trini.
I remember Trini Triggs.
We didn't get the big... We didn't get the big killer number one that we were looking for, but Straight Tequila did pretty darn good, and Horse to Mexico did pretty well, and we had some wonderful songs with him. And in fact, he sends me things from time to time, but I think Nashville is just reaching out to the world. And see, most of our hits when we were in California were records like, you know, Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers. Oh, What a Night.
What a great song.
Oh, What a Night by the Four Seasons. The biggest hit they ever had was on our label.
On MGM?
On Curb.
Oh, okay.
Back when we were distributed by Warner, Curb Warner. Mm-hmm. 1975, we had Who Loves You. Their earlier hits were on VJ, and then they went to Philips. Mm-hmm. But in the 70s, all their hits like Who Loves You, which went to number 3 in Billboard, Oh, What a Night, December 63, which went number 1 in Billboard. Let Your Love Flow by the Bellamys went number 1 in Billboard on the pop chart.
Great song.
I mean, the country went number 1 on the pop
Crossed
chart.
Crossed over, right.
Kiss You All Over by Exile went number 1 on Curb Records on the pop chart.
Oh, yeah. Exile was on Curb, weren't they?
Yes. At that time, that they had Kiss You All Over. It went number 1. But so did John Cassidy. So did Donnie and Marie Osmond.
You love all kinds
so
of
did
music.
So did Candyman. Candyman, which was originally...
Sammy Davis Jr.
It was the My Curb Congregation record. We overdubbed... It bombed by my group. And I overdubbed Sammy Davis Jr. over it as the producer, and it went number 1 in Billboard.
How did you originally... I mean, you started very young.
Right.
How did you get hooked on it originally?
Well, look...
How did you
my
start?
Dad was... I was born in Savannah, Georgia. My dad was an FBI agent. He got transferred, and we ended up... in Compton, California. I went to a school that was very racially mixed, which was great because my grandmother was Hispanic and just a wonderful, wonderful example of being a great immigrant. You know, just she put herself through college. She's the person who insisted that I do government service because she cared about America.
So is that where you got the philanthropy?
My grandmother was
right, out
really,
of the chute.
Yes, because she said, look, if you're lucky enough to make money, give it back. Put it into something you believe, restoration, to the homeless, to charity. Do what you can. Education is a big area. And we do. I mean, we've probably put half of everything that's come in. In fact, people have criticized me for not putting more money back into the record company. So that's why when we bought Word, we said, all right, instead of starting another college, we've got 10 colleges now, and we've got 12 buildings on Music Row. Let's buy a record company and double our size. And
are you going to keep them where they are, and you guys stay here in your offices? Is that the plan?
It's kind of up to them.
Are you going to stay on Music Row?
Never. I'm never leaving Music
Row.
Are you kidding me?
I wanted to tell the.
Are you kidding me? After we've restored 12 buildings, I mean, why? I wouldn't move off Music Row. I mean, I even in my will, they can't. I've got a trust set up where they can't move us off Music Row.
Well, we were out for a run the other Saturday, a couple Saturdays ago, and I think I counted 19 cranes along a short route. That people who have never been in Nashville don't understand it, but it's just exploding. I heard that 80 new people a day are moving to Nashville. Why don't you just become mayor?
Oh. I promise.
How many times have you been asked that?
Well, let me say this. I've been asked a lot of questions like that. But, you know, my views, first of all, are not conservative enough for Nashville, for Tennessee.
You're a Reagan Republican.
I'm a Reagan Republican, but I'm also a Wade Jessen Republican.
What does that mean?
It means that I believe in non-discrimination. I believe in non-discrimination, period, you know, and so that is not exactly a
it's
platform.
Not political enough.
But let me say this. I promised my wife when she got ill in California and we moved to Nashville with our two young teenage daughter.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the dogs.
Well, we had two dogs and two horses, but we had two daughters.
How many kids do you have?
Two. Mm-hmm. But they were just starting middle school and we wanted them to be in Nashville. And that's really why we moved.
It's a great place to raise kids. Right?
It is. I was paranoid about leaving California because I loved Hollywood and I loved the.
You have a star in the Walk of Fame, the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yeah. I didn't know that until I prepped for this, for talking to you this morning.
Sometimes I can't believe that they did that, but I mean that's what I mean. I loved living in Hollywood and I loved living in California and I love the views of the inclusive views of people in California. Having said that, I also love Tennessee, you know, and I love what Nashville is becoming. We got a great mayor now, and just yesterday we opened a Grammy.
Is it our first female mayor?
First female mayor, and her name is Megan Berry. And yesterday, Megan Berry and I cut the ribbon for the Grammy Museum at the Musicians Hall of Fame, and it's something that where I introduced the Grammys to the Musicians Hall of Fame and Joe Chambers, and so with the help of Megan Berry back when she was on the city council, and now with Megan Berry as mayor, we just have a great inclusive mayor, and so I promised my wife I would never do that when we moved to Tennessee, and my wife has Crohn's disease and some other issues, and I think it's helped keep her alive because when I was in government. You know, and someone's attacking you every day. That's your wives take it very hard. Mm. You know, and so
sometimes harder than you probably, right?
Yes, because I was anxious to get back into the record business. So I kind of wanted to get back in the record business. So I got to the point where I didn't care whether I was reelected or not. But it's a terrible thing to say. But I'm a person that loves to listen to music every night. I love the record business.
How do you physically listen to music? Are you listening to discs or an iPod or files? How do you listen to music?
Well, I still prefer to hear it on a CD, but I mean, I like it. I like Spotify. I mean, I like iTunes, but I mean, I prefer to listen to a CD on a record player that I have at home, a music player. Because I want to hear it the way it's going to sound on the radio, so I don't boost the bass, I don't boost the treble. I listen to it, and then if I feel like it needs more high end or more bottom end or more middle,
have an ear that most of us don't have. But isn't it great that kids are listening to vinyl again?
Well, it is. Back when we had vinyl, I mean, I was Billboard's Producer of the Year But unfortunately, that was
1972, right?
Unfortunately, it was 1972.
That was a great year for music.
It was a great year for me in music. And mm-hmm. we had Lou Rawls, we had Sammy Davis Jr., we had Solomon Burke, we had the Silvers, we had the Osmonds, who sounded like the Jackson 5 with their One Bad Apple. I had the Mike Curb Congregation. I mean, we had lots of artists that were doing well, and I was producer of the year. But you know something? When I moved to Nashville and I saw hundreds of producers much more talented than me, hundreds of songwriters much more talented than me, I said, you know, I'm lucky to have a job. And in order to preserve my job, I better keep owning this company, because if I sold it, I think I'd be the first one that got fired.
And you have one of the great producers of all time here, Jim Ed Norman.
Yes, he's great.
He's produced a lot. Can you just mention a couple of the great records that he's been involved with?
Yes. First of all, Jim Ed and I had Hank Williams Jr. together for for most of his career. I wrote and produced his first number one, All for Love of Sunshine. But Jim Ed produced a lot of those fabulous records like Tear in My Beer, with Hank Sr. and Hank Jr. But so, he just did one great record after another. And, you know, we had the Curb Warner relationship, and we extended that out because of Jim Ed. So I worked with Jim Ed throughout that whole period with Hank. And during that period, Jim Ed was producing Hank. And I realized that he was a better producer than me. So when he left Warner and left the business, I started working on talking to him to get back in it.
Huh.
And now
that's
he's
awesome.
In it all the way, and he's the CEO of our company and doing great.
Can you remember the first concert you ever went to?
Well, yes, because I was in Compton. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you who
you
it was.
And NWA straight out of Compton.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I like NWA,
and you they were awesome.
Yeah, I like them. And you know something, I love living in Compton. I love going home with African American friends of mine. Yeah. Of course, most of their mothers were playing Mahalia Jackson at that time,
great music. So, what was the first concert you went to?
Well, it was Johnny Otis, because there was a theater right by the right near the elementary school I was going to in Compton, and they would and the Johnny Otis show would come there a couple of times a year, and he'd have Little Esther Phillips, and this was just before Elvis broke, and I was getting to hear these artists like Joe Turner and Esther Phillips and Johnny Otis and these California artists, Don and Dewey, the ones that were having hits. Most of them African-American, and I was getting to hear them on small stations in Compton, and then Elvis came along and sang the same songs. Mm. Of course, Elvis popularized these songs.
And that's why he got on the radio. People thought he was black, and he was a white guy.
Because Elvis respected.
Right.
If you take Arthur Crudup, you know, who wrote That's All Right Mama, which was really it wasn't his first chart record, but it was the first record that where people really said, wow, this guy's got something special. His early records on Sun were on the country chart.
A lot of people might not know, but, you know, way back then, you know, there was a lot of vanilla white covers of great songs that got on the radio, and black artists didn't get on the radio for a long time. Until Elvis, right?
Well, yes. What would happen is the R&B station would break a record, and then a white artist would cover it. I do remember, though, one time talking to Little Richard, because we put out a album of Little Richard's greatest hits. They were originally on a label called Specialty, but we were lucky enough to get Little Richard to do an album of his hits. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, I made more money as a songwriter when Pat Boone did my records, you know, so than I did when I recorded them as an artist, and that's kind of, you know, that's the way it was. Now Elvis, whenever Elvis would record one of those records that was popularized by an African American artist, that artist would suddenly get tons of royalties. So, but having said that, Chuck Berry proved, with his electric guitar, mm-hmm. and Fats Domino proved, with the way he played piano and with great production from Bartholomew, people like Fats Domino and Chuck Berry proved that black artists could get on the mainstream chart. It just took them a little bit of time to do it.
And they were influencing Chuck Berry, the Beatles, the Stones,
right,
when you asked them about their influences, and Little Richard, of course, and a lot of those guys. You know, I
Chuck Berry even said, I was watching a show one night, and he was asked, I think it was Casey's show, and he was being interviewed, and he said, they said, why did you play the electric guitar? He said, because I knew they couldn't cover my records because they couldn't play guitar like me. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
I want to ask you a couple of more things before we wrap up. You know, as we get older, your relationships seem to be more and more than anything else, you know. And so have you and Tim McGraw met for that beer yet and just...
Well, you know something?
Put things aside.
Just to say this, we are so proud of our 23-year relationship with Tim McGraw. Mm-hmm. And he re-signed with us a couple of times. You know, it's kind of like if you've been in a long marriage, if you want to find one or two things where you disagreed. But the important thing, if you disagree, whether it's with your wife or whether it's with an artist, did you resolve it and is everybody happy? Mm-hmm. And we did. And we resolved it quickly. It may not have been exactly what I wanted. It may not have been exactly what he wanted. But the good news is we have 23 years of fabulous catalog. I mean, what is it worth to have songs like Live Like You Were Dying, you know, and Indian Outlaw, and I Like It, I Love It, and all these fabulous records that Tim did. And Tim had, in my opinion, is one of the greatest song pickers in the world. He could pick a song, and he knows how to pick that song that fits the register in his voice. He knows exactly the right producer, and he's got the right producer in Byron Gallimore. So I just prefer to remember 23 great years rather than to remember one or two times where you might have disagreed over a greatest hits album or disagreed over this or that. I mean,
so if you see each other today, you're good. You guys are good.
I would hope so, because basically, if you asked me to name three things that I disagreed with Tim on in 23 years, I couldn't think of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I could think of one or two. I just am so proud that he started on our label, and also that we stuck with him for about 5 years while he was putting out records that didn't hit until we got Indian Outlaw. You know, but we had four or five records before that. In 4 or 5 years.
You do stick with artists a long time.
Well, Rodney Atkins was 8 years on our label before he got If You're Going Through Hell, and then it went all the way to number one, and he's had, I think, seven Billboard mm-hmm. number ones, counting albums and singles, you know. So if you believe in somebody, you should stick with them, and if you really care about them. And then, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, you know, you can make all the artists happy some of the time and some of the artists happy all the time, but not all the artists happy all the time. I think he said that. I'm just teasing you.
Nobody's going to disagree with you.
He didn't say artists, but I'm joking, obviously. But what he said is true, which is every artist on your label is not going to be number one every week. So when you asked me earlier, what's our biggest job? Our biggest job is working with those artists who haven't yet had a hit record, or the artist that had a hit record and then has had a dry spell for two or three records, keeping that record, that artist motivated. That's why it's hard for me to subscribe to the Simon Cowell type stuff, because if you take an artist whose record isn't hitting, or an artist... If we had said things like that to Tim McGraw before, in the years before he had Indian Outlaw, we could have broken his spirit. So it might be fun TV to watch people being, you know, slammed and all that, but it's mean-spirited, and it's mm-hmm. not reality. Reality, the real reality show is what we live every day, and that's keeping these artists who don't have a hit motivated so they will continue to believe in themselves.
Mm. Do you watch Nashville, the TV show?
Yes, I do. It is my wife's favorite show. And
have you been on? Have
no,
they had you on?
I've never been on it. But they use our building. We have a building that we originally built for our motorsports, right off Trinity Lane, and they were looking for a huge building to put all the sets where they could recreate the Bluebird Cafe and recreate the Ryman and the Governor's Mansion and all that. So that's our building. And what we're hoping is that we hope the show lasts forever, not just because we're getting fabulous rent and all that.
It's a great commercial for Nashville.
It's just a great thing for Nashville. But we're hoping that if the day comes where they do stop the show, that they'll keep the sets here. So we'll have another fabulous tourist attraction because, see, that's in the actual city of Nashville. That building is in. So we're proud to own the building where it is. So my wife, it became her favorite show. We don't miss it. I mean, and tonight at 9 o'clock, we'll be watching it.
That's great.
We don't miss it. But she will. If I forget that show, because I tend to, particularly during a political season or whatever, or if there's a, you know, one of the TV shows on for one of the award shows, I tend to want to watch it. And if I accidentally cut into that 9 o'clock slot here, when that show's on, I hear about it from my wife.
Final question: who's your next big star on Curb?
Well, I think the next. I'll tell you right now: Mo Pitney, Jackson Mickelson, and Dylan Scott are just about to break through. And they, to some degree, they already have. They've already, Mo and Dylan have already charted. They're just this far away from breaking big. I think the next giant hit, if we can ever get this record by Lee Brice, it's been out for 9 months.
It's number 15 right now.
I know, and it's starting to really sell now, and we've been working it for 9 months. But, you know, we don't get an automatic, like, drinking class or I Don't Dance on every song. This record was one that took a long time, but it's such a great record by Lee. We've stayed with it for 9 months.
He just seems like such a steady Eddie, hit after hit. Yet he hasn't won any awards yet, has he?
Oh yes, he was won the Record of the Year last year for I Don't Dance from the Academy.
Has he won any male vocalist awards?
Yes, he's got an ACM, he's got a CMA award. I believe the CMA award was a songwriter award. He wrote the Eli Young band record Crazy Girl, but I think he also won it. For one of I'm trying to think, it might have been Drive Your Truck. I'm trying to remember if it was. He's won awards. Does he deserve more? Yes. And if you were going to ask me what the next major hit is, we're about to put out a duet between Jared Neiman and Lee Brice.
Oh.
And I believe that.
What's that called?
Well, it's called A Little More Love, and I believe that. It's going to be a number one record. I'm going out on a limb there.
Give us the ad date so I can write it in my column next week. I'm just kidding.
Well, can I tell you what the ad date is?
You know what the ad date is?
If you'll tell me when the current Lee Brice record will stop, and because we certainly don't want to kill that record off after working nine months.
It seems to be doing really well right now.
Well, it's in the top 15.
It's 15 right now.
And it's in the top 15. If you could tell me the day that it's going to stop, that's the day we'll release.
Well, hopefully not for a little while. Well, Mike Curb, it has been such an honor and pleasure talking to you. I really enjoyed it. Really have. Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you, you know, for caring about music, for writing about the history of music. But we have one thing in common. We both like to talk about the history, but we also like to talk about what's happening now. And I appreciate the fact that you're doing that, and I love the fact that your background is in radio, because radio, that's what I would have loved to have been able to do. I don't have, as you could tell, the right voice.
Well, that's the one thing you didn't do, I guess.
Well, I don't have the right voice for it, but my best friends have always come from radio, and I just appreciate everything you've done in radio, everything you're doing at Billboard, and the fact that you're doing these podcasts and you know, we're talking about the history and the future and we're talking about good things.
It's been an honor. Well, thank you, Mike Curb.
Thank you.
It's been a while. I don't mean to pry, but when I asked you if you happy, I didn't hear a smile, and that don't sound like you. No, that ain't the girl I knew. You always sounded like truck tires on a gravel road.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.